This is Ashley Hodge with the Sikkim 365 podcast, and I am pleased to be joined by John Jakus, one of the assistant head coaches for the national champion Baylor Bears, and 16-2 right now, ranked number 5 in the country. Kind of a roller coaster week this past week. Baylor suffered their first two losses of the year back-to-back on the home court, but they bounced back with a terrific win at West Virginia. So we want to dive into those, you know, topics for sure. John, thank you, first of all, for taking time. I love your shirt, and I totally agree. That's my shtick. Wingspan does matter, and matters in a lot of sports, but especially the game of basketball.
Yeah, thank you. One, the shirt is to honor you, and two, I think wingspan matters not just in basketball and defense and rotations, but yeah, especially in rebounding last night. I don't know if you watched and saw how physical it was. So length makes a difference, and every time we can make a wingspan plus in our recruiting, we're happy about it.
For sure. Yeah, that was a physical game, and what a gritty road win. So, you know, you're coming off a loss against Oklahoma State where the offense only scores 54 points. And then I think what was the final score? 77-68 last night, 77 points on the road. You know, obviously some shots that were taken against Oklahoma State just went through the bucket in Morgantown. LJ Cryer had a terrific game. Matt was fantastic. Adam Flagler made shots late. Jonathan was also really good. I mean, everybody across the board contributed. I don't want to leave anybody out, but terrific team win. How challenging is it this year with the Big 12, you know, 33, the top defenses in the country, everybody's ranked 33rd or better in defensive efficiency. I think Kansas is last right now in the Big 12 in defensive efficiency. I mean, is this a conference like you've never seen before, especially on the defensive end of the court? Does it just make it really challenging for offenses to score easy buckets?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a whole, our league has been harder on defense to handle than the league across the country. I think five out of the last 6 years were the number one rated conference. If you just go by scheduling, strength of schedule, whatever network, you know, net rating, whatever you want to use to gauge that, we're number one.
Right.
But this is a pretty unique year defensively, just because it is almost impossible for stretches to find points in any regular pace or comfortability. And I think we got 7 guys that have been head coaches of a Final Four team in our league at least.
Right.
And then you're dealing with the fact that I think 70% of our league is keeping things on the side and switching. So there's almost nothing to be run on the side that exists anymore. I would say more than that, double the post. So, you know, post touches is where the ball gets harder to score than ever. You almost can't throw it in there against some teams because of the way they front and immediately double.
Yeah.
So you're constantly looking for spots on the floor and rotations and ball screen coverages to pick on. And you said the word shot quality. I mean, at the end of the day, we have to fight for the right shot, the cleanest shot, the uncontested shot.
Right.
And then when the ball's in the air, we know that our players and ourselves are going to be judged. We like to say, good shot, bad shot, good shot, bad shot. If it goes in, you're a good coach. If it goes out, right, you're a bad coach. But
right,
all we can do is fight for uncontested ones. And when we miss the uncontested ones, we've got to stay positive about that and work through that. Because if you're getting uncontested shots in our league with 10 teams in the top 33 in defensive efficiency, you're actually doing really well.
Yeah, no doubt. And I know some of the challenges, even though the numbers defensively weren't bad against Oklahoma State and Texas Tech, there were a lot of transition points. So, you know, we would have kept both of those teams in the low 50s had it not been for the transition, you know, the turnovers on offense that led to transition buckets for each of those opponents. You know, how, I know you emphasize that, but how proud are you of James Kinjo is out, but Adam Flagler and LJ Cryer and Dell Bonner to really step up and take care of the basketball, particularly in the second half of that game against West Virginia? Because without James Akinjo, you know, on paper at least, I'm sure there were some fears that this could turn into a disaster. You know, West Virginia puts a lot of ball pressure on you. They can turn you over. And we've been to plenty of games in Morgantown where it gets out of control a little bit because of the turnovers. So, I mean, how proud are you of the way they, the poise and how they took care of the basketball last night?
Yeah, one, I would say we're incredibly proud just because I know we're at this place where over the last 3 years, we're winning over 90% of our games. We didn't lose a game in over 300 days. And it's almost like we're judged against perfection. And right. When you're judged against perfection and something goes wrong, there can be this real disconnect, and emotion ends up dictating how you make your decisions rather than facts. Feelings can trump things. And, you know, you introduce feelings into things, it gets really difficult. And I thought one of Scott's best things is he gave the guys four rules between Oak State and West Virginia. And you're not breaking these four rules. If you break one of the four rules, you're coming out of the game.
Yep.
And one of them was we got to get back on defense, and the transition defense had to get fixed. And the guys did a much better job of that. It's interesting because at West Virginia, you know, you go and you play and they do the post-game interviews, usually in a media room.
Right.
Well, the post-game media interviews were actually done in our locker room. Yeah. So Matt Meyer was the first guy to be interviewed, and he's sitting there and you're listening to him talk, and he's getting interviewed basically in front of the staff. And he was dropping hints in front of us in Matt's special sarcastic way that the practices since then have been incredibly difficult, maybe the hardest of the year.
Right.
So our job is to be faithful, to remind, but their job is to be coachable and to execute. And they executed Scott's game plan last night in a real special way. It's one of my favorite coaching jobs in my 4.5 years with Scott. And I'm just really proud of him. Really thankful to be working with him, but also really thankful for the guys. Yeah. And they went back to our joy model rather than the selfish model.
Yeah.
And sometimes the most selfless thing you can do is what you do when you don't have the ball in your hands, and getting back on defense is part of that.
Yep. Yeah, no, I love it. That, and it showed. I mean, I don't know, like from a fan perspective, I'm sure I'm not picking up on things that you guys see, especially because you watch so much film after the games, but it just didn't seem like the intentionality, the oomph, the passion was there for that Oklahoma State game. You know, I know, like you said, before we started rolling the podcast, sometimes when the ball doesn't go in the hole, your defense suffers. You start to slump a little bit. You don't get back on transition D. It can be contagious. But, you know, the one thing we've always been able to count on Baylor the last 3 years is that intense effort, the motor, you know, the joy motto. So I, you know, it definitely seemed like that was lacking in the Oklahoma State game. Great to see them regain that last night, you know, from an effort standpoint. So I'm curious, I know you weren't able to come to the Ode to Joy premiere on Friday night, but some of the staff was there. Have you gotten some feedback from those that went about the documentary? And I'm just curious to hear if there's been any, you know, talk amongst you guys on the Morgantown trip about the documentary.
Yeah, there was for sure. And I'm sorry I couldn't be there, but we had a recruit in town, and I can't talk about his name or who he is. But, you know, that's something I had to take responsibility for, make sure him and his family got in safely, and they arrived Friday night.
Right.
And but, you know, Coach Tang, Coach AB, Coach AD, they all went. One thing I can say about shot quality is, you know, we're a big team at rim shots, free throws, and three pointers. And as many as we can get, that's what we want. Now, in our league where everybody switches, you've got to take some floaters and mid-range shots just to survive it for stretches.
Yeah. Right.
But Scott's a huge, huge, huge shot quality guy.
Yeah.
And apparently during the movie, he was shooting and all he shot was mid-range shots. So Coach Tang came back and he said, Scott, I don't know what you're doing, but if any of our players watch that film, all you did was take mid-range shots. So they're not going to listen to you anymore. Because Scott likes to go around saying that's a 27% shot. And, you know, we'd rather take the three or the rim shot. So
right.
I know Scott got crushed for that. I know Miss Karen made people cry.
Yeah.
I know Coach Tang wasn't shy.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of things about it. But I think more than anything, you know, when you're in the middle of losing a game or two, especially when you haven't lost recently, it seems like the world's coming to an end. But I think what that movie does is it reminds everybody that there's this bigger picture about what Scott has accomplished over the last 20 years here.
Right.
And it's remarkable. And just, you know us and you know our culture. I can say that God's been faithful.
Yeah.
And that video is an expression of that.
Yeah.
And not just that, but Scott's faithfulness to the university.
Right.
And, you know, I'm just glad that the story was told. I hope that people support it. And supporting that story, you're supporting us. And the more people understand what's been built here over the last two decades, the more they'll fall in love with our kids and come to games. And I know you've done a bunch for us through all that you do. And the more the fans are out of games, the better it is for us long term. And as a national championship program, we want people to support. But supporting us is not just supporting the games, it's supporting our story. Yep. And that story was told in Ode to Joy. So I hope all the previews and premieres and everything you got going on with that, Ashley, is successful. And I just want to thank you for doing it. And I hope everyone goes out and supports it. But more than anything, I just think it was heartfelt. And that's what meant the most to the guys that were able to go.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. One other funny tidbit about the documentary is I talked to Coach Tang at the after party, and there was a part in the documentary where he mentioned that there was some secret video of the karaoke and the bubble life. And he goes, I happen to have some secret video in my pocket here. And then evidently that video surfaced, and I won't say who provided the video, but he was like, it was not me.
Well, goes, I can tell you that Scott found that out.
Yeah.
And he said immediately, that's a fireable offense. Jerome said it wasn't me. And my response was, just because you had your wife send it in instead of you, it doesn't mean it wasn't you, Coach Tang. That might help you keep your job, but it doesn't make you a truth teller. So we had some fun with that, because I can tell you, Scott, him shooting a mid-range shot's one thing, him singing in public is another, and he had no interest in people seeing that. So that's one of the other funny stories that's happened since the movie's been released. So I don't know who's getting fired, but somebody is.
There are some great laughs, you know, obviously some emotional moments too. Tweety Carter brought people to tears, like you said, Karen Craig as well, but definitely
Tweety made every coach that was there cry. That was said in our locker room. And you know, coming here from Gonzaga and working with the guards, and you're kind of new, and there was some staff change with Grant and Paul going. And my first summer here, Tweety came home with his family and chose to live in Waco. And I would say multiple days a week, he was in the gym when we were working out with the guards. And his spirit, his culture, what that first Elite 8 team did for the program was instilled in Davion and Jared and Maceo. And they learned from Tweety what it means to love Baylor. A lot of people play for Baylor. A lot of people use Baylor, but very few love it to the degree that Tweety did. And he taught our guards how to love it. And I'm not surprised that he cried or he made other cries. He's pictures on my wall, and I've never coached him.
Yeah.
And I think that just speaks to the testament of how much he loves his place and how much he loves Baylor. And it's not just the coaches that he was here with, but even the players now.
He's super passionate. I watched the documentary a couple of weeks ago, the first cut. And of course I was moved to tears when I saw his interview. And then I watched it several times after that. I mean, I've probably seen it five or six times as I try to find things that are wrong with it, try to make little tweaks here and there. But you know, every time I watch it, I get emotional. It's like, I mean, I know it's coming, but I still get emotional just because of the passion that he has for Baylor, the passion he has for Scott Drew, and the culture that's been built is very real, and it's so transparent. So really, really a cool part of the documentary. But there are some lighthearted moments. It's not just a heavy, plenty of laughter as well. So I urge every Baylor basketball fan or anybody listening to this to go check it out. We got a premiere in Dallas at the Park Cities Baptist this Friday night. And then we got the Texas Theater on Saturday night. And I know we're working to set up a private screening for you guys, for the coaches and the team as well. So we got, you know, San Antonio, Houston, Tyler, we're going to make the rounds. You can check Sikkim 365 for the dates. Well, I want to just ask you, you know, just as someone who, I know you guys attack everything as a staff, I was fortunate enough to go on the Iowa State trip, listen to your awesome chapel service and, you know, the scouting reports that you guys put forth. But, you know, as you look at the guard development, and especially when we have an injury to James Akinjo, like, what are you looking for as far as Adam Flagler, Dale Bonner, and LJ Cryer, you know, to be able to take that next step to, you know, next man up. I mean, they did a great job at West Virginia, but I'm sure there's more challenges ahead, and hopefully we get James back soon. But what do you look for as far as their development every day and, you know, becoming a more complete guard, where some of the message board chatter is, oh, we don't have a backup point guard. We need a backup point guard. But you know, can that be solved just by the current guys on the roster right now?
Yeah, I think it's good to start by saying that we're really proud of what they did last night.
Right.
And nothing replaces real minutes in player development. And as much as we can do things in the offseason, we can teach them their ball screen reads, we can preach shot selection, we can try to limit their over dribbling, we can make sure they affect the ball defensively, which I thought they'd take a huge step forward in that. I thought Dale took the biggest leap in just affecting the ball defensively. I thought LJ was more aggressive. Adam was better at getting back. Yep. So defensively, that's a decision often, not even a talent. So you can do all those things, but nothing replaces minutes in real games. And, you know, Adam had 4 turnovers last night. We're aware of that, but he also had 7 assists.
Yeah.
And he took some real steps. And I think that we're back to that place, like I was talking about a little earlier, where people expect almost perfection and they forget about the process. And one of the greatest joys of working for Scott is he lets us coach and he lets us coach the process. And, you know, LJ, he made an unbelievable decision last night to say, if we're going down, I ain't going down soft.
Yeah.
And his shots and the guts and which and when and how he took those shots and got those shots, I thought the way he cut off the ball was faster and more effective. I thought what he did with the ball was the highest level of 2-point finishing maybe of his career last night. Those floaters he had were unbelievable. And then Adam to withstand the early turnovers and hit those 2 sidestep threes in the biggest moments on the road, like you have to fall in love with loving your guys,
right,
and knowing that they don't need to be perfect for you. They just need to trust.
Yeah.
And I think and hope that people, as they watched the 3 of them last night, they fell in love with trusting them a little more and rooting for them a little more. And we did as a staff. And
yeah,
it's going to be hard because every time they succeed, there's going to be a different ball screen coverage or a different wrinkle that the next coach throws at them. They're never getting the same look 2 games in a row. So they're having to get to the point where they're a point guard or a combo guard who can handle the ball against 4 or 5 coverages in 4 or 5 different games in a row.
Yeah.
And they do their film work. They don't miss their extra work. They're incredibly in love with the game and the process in Baylor. So we choose to focus on the positive of that. And I understand that people are concerned with James being injured, but it's not our job to be concerned. It's our job to teach. And
right,
once again, like I said earlier, what I thought what Scott did between Oklahoma State and West Virginia was remarkable. And the way he kind of instilled confidence and stood by Adam, LJ, and Dale was pretty unique, but not just the guards. I thought the whole team,
yeah,
even the way we set up the offense and the reads to take advantage of Matthew in a unique or new way. I just thought it was really, really special. So I understand how people are concerned about that, but it's not our job to be concerned. It's our job to serve our players.
Sure.
And we're only as good as they are. And I thought they were excellent last night.
Yeah, and Adam, even though he had the 4 turnovers, did he have any in the second half? Was one of those turnovers in the second half, 3 of them?
No, I don't think that he did, and he certainly didn't have any live ball turnovers that led to transition points, which is another big thing that we worked on and addressed, and Scott did a great job with, is that Moke State, our turnovers are live ball turnovers, and at West Virginia, they weren't. And historically, you know this, at West Virginia, maybe that's the home of live ball turnovers.
Yes.
And there's been a ton of road games for us where when you go there because of the aggression, slapping and the fouling, and they foul so much that they don't get called. Now they're in transition. And I thought that our guys did an excellent job staying away from live ball turnovers, and Scott's game plan there was pretty special.
There was one sequence that I saw on Twitter, and I saw it live too, but I think Dale Bonner got the rebound. I got my facts right. He gets hammered on the rebound. He passes it to Adam Flagler. Adam Flagler gets run over from behind, gets knocked to the ground, doesn't get called for a turnover, but he passes it. And then I think Bonner ends up going to the hole, gets fouled on his way to the hole, gets fouled on the shot. And then Sean McNeil gets the rebound, and Jonathan gave him like a little love tap and they called a foul on Jonathan. I was like, man, this is something else. I mean, that was like West Virginia in a nutshell, but that's life on the road. You know, it's except for in Waco. I don't know if it's life on the road in Waco, but hopefully we can change that as the season and time goes on.
But yeah, I'll let you say all that. I'm just going to keep working on the guards, keeping two hands on the ball and jump stopping instead of running through charges. And we're going to focus on the details of what we can control, because I'm not sure we can control any of that at all. But
yeah,
I'm glad you're rooting for us, Ashley. I appreciate the support.
Well, listen, I appreciate you taking a few minutes to catch up with us here. And, you know, just I guess in closing, what are some things that you're concerned about going forward? Where do we need to get better? I guess I'll leave with that. What's as a coach, you know, what do you think we need to improve on to continue to grow as a team and be playing our best ball in March?
Yeah, I think our identity still comes down to, in a league where everybody plays top 33 defense, you can't have a night on where you take defense off.
Right.
And the guys, our sport is pretty sensitive because who gets to shots dictates so much how people feel. Like a left tackle in football, they're not going to pass him the ball. Like, he knows what his role is. In baseball, everybody gets equal bats. Like, but in basketball, shots are selective.
Right.
And we can't let that affect the way we play defense, because the reality is you need transition points to win in our league. Yes. And then you need offensive rebound dagger threes after the set.
Yep.
And so much of what we need to be successful in our league is what you do the 95% of the time you don't have the ball. And you can't take nights off. The defense got to be locked in. You got to take transition easies when you can get them. And then when the ball's in the air, you got to go get second chance points. And if you can, you know, there's four factors that affect our game. If you're into analytics, it's who shoots the ball well. We're number one in our league in field goal percentage, whether people believe that or not, it's true.
Yeah,
right. We have the best, we're number one in offense in our league right now.
Right.
Who rebounds and keeps other people from rebounding?
Yep.
Who turns it over? And then free throw margin.
Yeah.
And we can't control the fourth. That comes down to reffing and where you're at. But the first three we can control.
Right.
And so we just need to stay locked in one at a time. Don't get ahead of ourselves. And if we do those first three at a high level at Oklahoma, then we'll take that one and move on.
Yep.
But you just can't settle in and say we're good or bad at anything or overreact. You just need to live by the rules that Scott's given us and then make sure we execute. So it's not that you're concerned. It's just that, you know, the teams in our league are so good, they can make you not do the things that help you. And we've got to find ways to fight that and do the things that help us the most.
Yeah. So you brought up something that's an interesting thing to think about. I noticed that there seems to be, I haven't done the math on this to see, but there seems to be more success on the road this year in the Big 12 than in past years, even with crowds back. Is that because the defense travels so well? So defense and rebounding, they always say that travels. And so everybody's so good at defense that it's maybe a little bit less, it's a little easier to get road wins than it has been in the past if you play great defense. I mean, is that something that's a thing, or do you think I'm off track there?
Well, I think defense certainly helps. I don't know that road wins are easy. I got to be careful if they say that.
Sure,
but,
sure.
When both teams play defense with the efficiency that all 10 teams are playing right now, you can affect the game in ways that you can't if it's offensively beautiful.
Right.
And offensive freedom of movement, it doesn't exist in our league. When you get to our league, there's not that there's more hand checking or more keeping people on the side, but there's just less freedom of movement. If you watch our games prior to conference and you watch our conference games, as you get deeper in a conference, especially the second time around, the freedom of movement is so limited.
Yeah.
And if you can limit movement and make people play one-on-one basketball, then it comes down to who can make the hardest shots.
Right.
And if you're allowed to do that on the road and at home, then you can win some more at the road. But my guess is that when we get to the end of the year, that'll balance itself out and people have better home records than roads. But I think the lack of freedom of movement is a real thing.
Yeah.
And I don't look at the reffing at that. I just look at the level of defense. We know how to limit each other's offense, in our league because we're so familiar with each other. So I don't know if that answers your question directly, but I certainly think because defense travels, you can win a few extra road games if you'll just stay in there and then make some shots in the last 5 minutes.
When you have a short turnaround, like the Saturday to Monday or the Saturday to Tuesday, I would imagine that your scouting capabilities are somewhat limited. I mean, it helps if you play the team the second time through, but when you have a few extra days, like Tuesday, you play Tuesday. Now Oklahoma has the same advantage, but then you turn around and play Saturday, you have that extra day. Does that help, like, as far as throwing new wrinkles into the equation? Is that, is it down to such a science that really that extra day doesn't matter too much?
Oh, I think the science is you just don't sleep. You know, I'll just be honest. Yeah. Between Oak State and West Virginia, we didn't sleep much.
Right.
And today was probably my first good day of sleep in 4 days.
Right.
And that sleep will help us. But, you know, maybe Oklahoma got to sleep in a little bit also, or just sleep 8 hours for one day or 7 hours, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But apart from sleep and a clear mind, it comes down to a science, and every staff has 8 people on staff, and we have our GAs, and you're pumping through film and you're making your decisions faster than ever. And the one thing you know is that your 10 to 20 best sets will be scouted by the other team.
Yeah.
So the wrinkle is, what are you going to do when those are taken away, and how can you find those things?
Yeah.
But what's never going to be lost is Oklahoma will know everything we run, and we'll know everything they run. And so then the war comes down to what we were talking about earlier. Can we get stops so we can get easies? And then after we miss, can we get second chance points? And if we can function in before offense and after offense, hopefully they'll break down to the point where our offense will lead to some shot quality shots in the half court, which is what I thought we got at West Virginia last night.
Yeah.
And so we're all fighting for the same thing, but the short answer to the question is we just don't sleep.
Yeah. Well, all right. I said final question. I've got one more. So
all right,
free throw defense wasn't very good last night, except when Gabe Osaboyan shot the ball. it tended to get a lot better when he was shooting, but in all seriousness, you know, I know like Matt has struggled from the line some this year. He steps up, knocks down all three. LJ, for as great of a shooter as he is, he's, I think, it's 6 for last 6 on free throws. But he's not been the most consistent free throw shooter, you know, this year, even though he's a terrific shooter. Is that, I mean, do you think, I know you practice free throw shooting all the time, but is there just no substitute for game rhythm? And, you know, as the season wears along, your free throw shooting gets better because guys are used to that, you know, going to the free throw line and in pressure situations during games. I mean, you know, or is it just law of averages over time? These guys are going to be, you know, LJ is going to be an 80% plus free throw shooter if you give him enough opportunities. Matt's going to be 70% if you give him enough opportunities. I mean, I'm just curious on your thoughts on what I just said.
Yeah, well, there's not a day that goes by we don't shoot free throws. We'll trick it up. Scott has all these games, and Alvin's got a game. Jerome's got a game. You know, Coach Peterson even has a game he used in the NBA or the G League. Like, we try to play these mental games. It's not just that they shoot, but we play them. The other thing is they got to make 10 in a row just to get out of the gym after practice is done. Then we line them up, and they've got to shoot in front of people. You know, everything you can do to mimic pressure is done. But the most powerful thing in an athlete is actually his mind.
Yeah.
And the truth is that they're called free, but there's nothing free about them.
Right.
Because you're just standing there alone and everybody's staring at you. And I tend to believe that what you said about the averages playing themselves out always works out. Like, Adams never shot less than 40% from three in his career. There's never been a season where Adam Flagler shot less than that. And there was this period of time where I think people were concerned about his shooting, and I wasn't concerned at all.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of the year, Adams can shoot 40% from three. Mm-hmm. And I think as we get deeper in the Big 12 play, it'll come down to how often we get there and not whether or not we make them. And we just need to stand by our guys and continue to breed confidence in them and let them know that they're going to make them when it counts and we believe in them. But even the sports psychology of that, I think Scott does a great job with. I mean, he has a plan for when they're at the line for everybody on our team, even down to the walk-on. He knows what's he going to say. So we address it the kids will be good at it. We just got to stick to it. And more than anything, we've got to get there more than our opponents. And that's the goal.
Yep. Yep. It's good stuff. Thanks, John. Appreciate you taking some time to catch us up on what's going on with Baylor basketball these days, and hoping that the season turns out like last year, but we're going to root for you either way. So thank you for doing this podcast with me.
Yeah. Good luck with Ode to Joy. Appreciate all you do for us. And, you know, we'll see you at the next home game. I know that you don't miss games, and we're super thankful for every fan we have like that. And like you and everybody from Sikkim 365 and the way they support us, we're super thankful. And you're part of telling our story. And like Scott says, our fans, our media, our athletic department, everybody plays a role in our success, and you're certainly part of that. So I just really want to say thank you, Ashley.
Well, thank you. You've been listening to a podcast with Ashley Hodge and John Jacobs, Sikkim Bears. Thank you.